Beware, spoiler folks! You've stumbled into a storm of spoilers, Thor Ragnarok, an MCU special. Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I am the god of balancing an egg on its end during the spring equinox.
You've, like, stymied me so much I forgot what mine was. Neil, you go.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I am the god of naps, because that's my favorite thing. Is naps.
I'm Jordan Robinson, and seriously, that egg thing really just threw me for a loop.
Did not see that coming.
So I'm Jordan Robinson. I'm going to call my... Oh, no, I remember what it is. Now with all the buildup, it's even more stupid. Hi, I'm Jordan Robinson, and I am the god of The Book Was Better.
Oh, and we're all naming ourselves gods because we're here to talk about Thor Ragnarok, the 17th entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe overall.
Wait,
this will be our last time this year to talk about it.
Is that number accurate? It really is the 17th?
Yep.
Holy mother. When I heard you say that, I was like, clearly he's embellishing, but wow. Okay.
No. There's two things I don't embellish about. Number of MCU movies and how easy it is to balance an egg on the spring equinox when I'm around.
Fair enough.
All right. And with that, hopefully I haven't flabbergasted Joanna too much, because this is the time we read reviews.
Well, while I stall and get my review ducks in a line, let me just say that maybe I should also be the god of there's a protest going on my block right now. And if you hear honking and cheering and wooing, that's what that's about. That's a protest that's happening that I can't stop. Nor would I, because we believe in the right to protest.
You're the god of protest.
God of protest. So yeah, you will hear my people hooting and chanting and honking in the background as they protest. I don't know what, because we just had an election and the Democrats did well. These are not conservatives out there on the corner, so I don't know what's going on, guys.
Like the one neo-Nazi in California.
Oh, wouldn't that be sad if you were the only neo-Nazi in Oakland?
No, you'd
why
still
you
be an asshole.
Why would you move to Oakland if you're a neo-Nazi? Okay.
Sounds like a fun children's book. I would read that.
It's like the
loneliest neo-Nazi.
The only gay in the village. All right. Wow, we got several new reviews. Okay. This one, I've not pre-read any of these, so let's just go for it. Nikki from Maryland, 5 stars. I'm a longtime listener of the show, so I want to do my part and leave a 5-star rating for the show I love so much. It's been wonderful getting insightful and well-informed thoughts about Game of Thrones, even from Dave, who knows an awful lot for someone who claims to have never read. The off-season tour has been amazing as well and has introduced me to lots of really cool stuff I wouldn't have checked out on my own. I credit this podcast with single-handedly making me like spoilers. And as an SJW myself, I more than welcome these elements, no matter how annoying some may think they are. Keep up the good work. P.S. Do a Jurassic Park episode of the off-season tour. I need it now.
Co-signed, because I can read, just not George R.R. Martin books.
Michael Crichton books, though, for sure.
Yeah, I'm all into that.
Jury's out, so we'll see. If Dave manages to read a Michael Crichton book, then we'll agree with him that he actually does have the ability to read. All right, this one came from Shaz's Revenge, my new favorite thing, 5 stars. I came here looking for great Game of Thrones, The Song of Ice and Fire analysis and commentary. Instead, I got here during the off-season tour and am hooked. Tuning in is like listening in on three new friends having a great conversation. Is that creepy? Maybe that's a little creepy. That was Shaz's comment, not mine. I don't think it's creepy. I'm going back to listen to the previous episodes because y'all, she didn't say y'all, or he. You're all so enjoyable. Thank you for giving me something new to look forward to. P.S. Please do that Buffy episode. I'd love to hear Joanna's thoughts on Dawn Xander in the comics. Personally, it's a huge no. Oh my God. It's the biggest no. Shaz's revenge. Oh, oh, flames. All right. I'm going to just read one more because it's Stranger Things related and it's going to sort of age out of the system if I don't read it today, which is, this is from N-R-I-E-B-Z. I don't know what that stands for. I ship Billy and Steve, and I don't care who knows it. 5 stars. Now that I got your attention, I love you guys and your podcast so much. I look forward to listening to your wonderful voices every week. So I mostly wrote this 5 stars. You're welcome, Dave. Review so I can offer some thoughts on Stranger Things. I haven't listened to The Storm yet, so forgive me if this is repetitive or if I harp on things you guys have already talked about. But I'm currently watching the last episode right now and I have to give you all my thoughts. Now, first things first, this season could have been 7 episodes. Why do we care now that Eleven has a secret sister for a whole episode? And why did Jonathan and Nancy have to take a whole episode of pointlessness to hook up? None of this pays off, in my opinion. I found the new characters, Billy and Max, much more compelling than Nancy and Jonathan and 8. Also, can someone please explain why she was the big chunk of episode 7 and not 8? I wish I knew why. I think we could have used those episodes to learn more about Billy. I know he's totally gay and in love with Steve, and Steve is open to the idea because a regular straight jock manboy would never let Jonathan take Nancy away from him. Also, RIP Sean Astin, the real MVP, who metaphorically carried everyone on his back to throw the ring into Mordor, or to use computer code to get Will, the ring, out of Mordor, the lab. I don't know where I lost this metaphor. I mean analogy. Thanks for reading. Sorry, I got a little long-winded. Noelle from Maryland. Thanks, Noelle. I like this gay Billy and Steve idea. I'm sorry to anyone listening if there was a Sean Astin spoiler in there you didn't want. And the end.
Yeah, we're not responsible for review spoilers. That's out of our hands.
It's been a little bit of time since Stranger Things. I feel like if you care, you would have seen it by now. Ugh, that's
that's
a bullying attitude.
Well, we were talking about whether or not we should do a calm and storm for Thor Ragnarok. You were like, no, we should do a little calm. But it's been like 2.5 weeks in Australia. And
yeah, but most of our demographic is American. And so it's been out less than a week here in America. So I just suggested that we have a micro calm section and then a massive storm section.
Yeah, I'm just making
it's the micro calm.
I'm making my murder board of interconnecting yard of when Joanna does or does not object to spoilers. It's building to a thesis.
Oh God.
Not a murder. A thesis, not a murder. Pivoting off of that,
you guys, if I end up dead, please find this board that Dave has made because the clues are all there. Okay.
Yeah, I feel like Dave is like way low on the list though of people that we would suspect
of murdering me, but that's why it's the perfect crime, right?
Well, it's getting less and less the perfect crime the more we discuss it on our public podcast. I'm certainly unhappy about that. Neil, your segment's called We Talked About This Already.
Yeah.
We actually have some Game of Thrones things this week, yeah, which is nice.
Sort of. I mean, we got a couple things that we could talk about Game of Thrones-wise. Just a few little tidbits we picked up from the various interviews and production thingies and people around the production. The first is Ben Crompton, who plays Dolores Ed, who is everyone's favorite character, who they can't remember his name. But I remember his name at all times. Dolores Ed is the shit. Anyway, he really didn't say a whole lot. He just said that the final season is brilliant and that there are things in this season that they've never no one else has ever done on the telly, which is British for television. So there's that. So thanks, Ben Crompton, for, you know, getting the hype train. But you know what, it's worth mentioning though, because if the cast, like, if they genuinely believe that and they're not just saying it, that's always good. It's good to like what you do and do it well. So
Well, this also, yeah. I mean, they could have, this also seems to bolster the theory that Tormund and Beric might survive the wall by walking towards Castle Black and meeting Ed there. Because, like, otherwise, the walls, like, those of us who thought the battle of ice and fire would be fought at the wall. Not Dave. He's got his own theories, but those of us who foolishly thought...
Trident.
Nothing but trident. If, you know, the wall's down now, so it's probably... The battle's probably not going to be at the wall. The wall's probably not going to be that important. So that means if Ed's involved, you know, they could have left him out of it entirely. But, you know, I like the idea of Beric and Tormund picking Ed up and going south from there. So.
Ooh, yeah. I love good pairings.
Yes.
That's a good pairing.
Yeah, I like it.
We also got word from Ellie Kendrick, who plays Mira Reed. Sorry. Almost forgot her name. Sorry. That was bad. Talking about her role as Mira Reed and how she was very proud to have survived four seasons. But then she was asked in this interview with Metro about whether or not she is coming back. And she says that she is not appearing as far as she knows and that she really doesn't know. And that so it seems like so far no one's told her whether or not she's coming back. That actually does seem like maybe she's not coming back. Like, I feel like she would at least have it on her calendar. Like, oh, gotta go shoot Game of Thrones this week.
Yeah, so, production's already started, and it's like a long production, so maybe they call her next year. But it is weird because, you know, all the Game of Thrones actors have talked about, like, when you're killed off, you get a call from both Dan and David call you, right? That's you know, creatures great and small, that's true. But Mira didn't die, so she didn't get the you're dead call. But she's also
yeah, she just sort of left.
The, like, you're coming back call. So that sucks. Like, she should get a call from Dan and David, like... You're not coming. She should know.
Right. Unless she's doing that Game of Thrones thing where she's not telling the truth, which I don't know. I don't have any reason not to believe Ellie Kendrick. She seems pretty on the level.
Well,
so
they justify it because they think that they're like preserving the fan experience when they lie. So like, I don't get mad about it, except for the whole Jon Snow thing because it's so dumb. But like, you know, if they think they're preserving the fan experience by prevaricating in the press, then like, okay. But if Mira's not coming back, which it seems like maybe she's not, then that means never talk to me again about Jon Snow and Mira Reed being twins. And also...
sad.
This means we might not get Howland Reed ever. So
yeah, which is kind of a bummer.
We would definitely not get Howland Reed.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I'm just going to leave the door open a crack. To be like, what if Howland Reed shows up? He's like, my daughter Mira's back in the swamp, but I came here to tell you things. I mean, we don't need Howland because the reason you bring in Howland Reed is because he knows what happens at the Tower of Joy, but so does Bran now and also Sam. So we don't need no stinking Howland Reed at all.
Yeah. We have people that can see all things. Yeah. And my last one, there's two more, but one, I only have one. Anyway. Is that they have not only built, but have been testing giant trebuchets, which are the things that sling rocks and other dangerous things. And really, I don't care what this means for the show. I just want to steal that thing when they're done with it. Like, I just want one of those.
You want a Game of Thrones trebuchet?
Yeah, it appears to be several feet tall, like, you know, maybe... 15, 20 feet tall, massive, can hurl large boulders. I want one of those in my backyard, is all I'm saying. So we have to go to Titanic
Studios. Where did this boulder in our yard come from? Certainly not from the house two doors down with a giant trebuchet.
I feel like that's the most me thing possible, is to go all the way to Titanic Studios in Ireland and not take any photos, just like steal a giant trebuchet. That's all I want.
I feel like I've definitely talked about the battle scene and timeline on this podcast before, and how my friends and I always used to make fun of it because they light arrows and then they go night arrows when they shoot them. But they also do that with a trebuchet. They go trebuchet as they shoot it. So anytime I see or hear the word trebuchet in my head, I just hear the way it's like shouted in ye old medieval battlefield in the film timeline based on the book by Michael Crichton.
Oh, fair enough.
Great story, Joanna.
Great story. Classic. Speaking of great Joanna stories, I believe you wanted to talk about Amelia Clark's hair.
I do want to talk about Amelia Clark's hair. Amelia Clark posted a couple of photos on Instagram the past few days. One In one of them, Jason Momoa is there with her and they're having a pint together in London. And, you know, and they have their usual like sun, moon and stars blow sun of my whatever Instagram chatter they have. And some people are like, oh my God, does that mean Khal Drogo's coming back? I don't think so.
No, she was at the Justice League premiere.
She was in London. Jason Momoa, like, has been on the Instagram of Game of Thrones actors before, just visiting the set. He goes to Dublin a lot because I think he does have some sort of Guinness spokesmanship deal. Anyway. And then she posted one a couple days later that's just her drinking. It might be from the same night. It's unclear. Okay. The point being, her hair that she dyed platinum, Khaleesi platinum, has had significant grow out on the roots. So there's like a very, I don't know, an inch of dark, something like that on the roots. So I'm confused because I feel like if she did bleach her hair in order to like put Khaleesi extensions in or something, you know, like whatever it is, she can't have no roots. unless they plan to like CG that out or something like that. So I don't know what's happening with Emilia Clarke's hair. I don't know. Like, we were.
This is going to become like the Henry Cavill's mustache of Game of Thrones.
we were bouncing around some ideas, and one idea I actually really like is that they filmed her like last scene first or something like that. Like, she ends up with short, because her hair's short now. It's like right below her chin, her jawline, sort of. Like, that Daenerys ends up with short hair right at the end when she's dying or something like that. And they shot it first so that, like, they could get away with it so that, you know, later towards the end of production when we're looking closely for how does it all end, but they've already shot it. That's my crackpot theory. All pegged to Emilia Clarke's hair. So I have
like
evidence
it
for this, guys. That's why they call it crackpot. So
it's good. Cracky. It's potty. I like it.
Yep. It's both of those things.
Yep. It's all those things.
Well, it wouldn't be a Game of Thrones off season if we weren't checking out everybody's hair. So I'm glad at least that exists, although I don't know enough about how much of a bitch it is to put in extensions and wigs on productions the size of Game of Thrones. I can only assume it's horrid.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. We'll find out. As long as somebody's watching the hair, we will keep watching the hair.
Our hair watch continues.
Our hair watch continues. And we're about to talk about a movie that also has some traumatic hair shearings. Right after this break. That was a weird transition to talk about Thor Ragnarok. Because although the hair is important for like a certain cameo, it's sort of a bit about this movie that is the third entry in the Thor trilogy, the 17th entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And instead of doing what a lot of people, including myself, expected, and continue the road to Infinity War, it is a comedy that sort of reinvents how the Thor character works in this universe would be my least spoiler way of talking about it. We're going to really quick talk about our spoiler-free thoughts about Thor Ragnarok, just in case you haven't seen it in theaters now, worldwide. Then we're going to transition into spoilers and some of your questions after that. But first, Neil, spoiler-free, Thor Ragnarok, what did you think?
Oh, it's so great. It's okay, so here's my theory. This is actually, theory is the wrong word. This is just a take. There are two classes of Marvel movies. There's the fun ones, and there's the ones that I have to do all the legwork to like get us from, you know, point A to point Q, apparently. So, like, I don't know if you could rank all the Marvel movies together. You kind of have to split them into these two categories. So, you know, like with the serious ones, with the legwork ones, it's like Winter Soldier is legit. But when it comes to the fun ones, there's like Guardians of the Galaxy, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Yeah, pretty much those two.
Ant-Man.
Ant-Man. Yeah, Ant-Man's another one. It's sort of a side movie that Ant-Man then shows up in Civil War. But I think this might be, and this is saying a lot because I've rewatched Guardians of the Galaxy, the first Guardians of the Galaxy, a number of times. This might be the most rewatchable, just purely enjoyable Marvel movie. And that's not, you know, like I said, it's a different category. So but it's great. It's so much fun. It's a blasty. And Taika Waititi steals his own movie by putting himself into one of the characters. And Chris Hemsworth, highly underrated comedic timing. But I mean, I guess he's accurately rated now, but he was underrated. So I'm all in. I thought it was great. I'm ready to see it again.
And Joanna?
Yeah, I loved it. I do have like a little exercise I do with my friends that I see all the comic book movies with, where when we get out of a Marvel movie, we sort of like reassess our top five. You're right, Neil. Maybe it's not fair to rank like the all of the Marvel movies together, and yet that's what we do.
it's only unfair for me to do it because it would get weird because I'd be like, oh, Ragnarok, Guardians, Guardians 2, and then all the other ones. Because I like fun.
See, well, I like fun too, but Winter Soldier is still my number one and has been since it came out. Avengers is still my number two and has been since Winter Soldier displaced it. And then I put Thor Ragnarok 3. And then I think it's like Guardians and Iron Man 3, something like that. Iron Man 3, I think, is really fun too. And I mean, that's something that Kevin Feige has said, is that like when they get to the third installment in a trilogy, like Captain America, Winter Soldier, or no, Captain America Civil War and Iron Man 3 and Thor 3, they just sort of like, we don't have to sort of be part of a rigid arc anymore. We can just sort of do something fun with it. Civil War, I think, was kind of fun. I watched it last night. I enjoyed it. So yeah, I hear what you're saying about that. And I think going forward, my suspicion is we're going to see less of those we need to get business done movies, because I feel like they really learned their lesson from Ultron. And we're just going to see as much Guardians type stuff as possible. Anyway, I love this movie. I love Taika Waititi. So, his sensibility, you know, there's so many great scenes in this movie that are improvised. Or I should say are a result of Taika Waititi just shouting suggestions at his actors, and they're great. And we can talk a little bit in more detail in the storm about how maybe two parts of this movie don't entirely work together. I think that Dave did not like this movie as much as we did, but I will turn it over to Dave.
I liked it a lot, and it is a lot of fun. I'm not sure if I would rank it as high in my all-time Marvel movies, because I don't have as much of a problem as Neil as separating getting things done movies from fun movies, because this is like my nostalgia teenage boyhood, so it's all very serious in the first place, and still unable to let that go after 17 movies, and like I'm still psyched that I got to see Spider-Man and meet Iron Man in theaters this year. That being said, this movie pushes what a Marvel movie is more than I think any previous Marvel movie, and because of that, a lot of it feels new and fresh, and a lot of it really works. I'm not sure if it's as rewatchable as Neil was suggesting. I've only seen it twice. Yeah, maybe like times 3 and 4 will be a little different, but I think there's a little bit of a sag, and there starts to be things that you notice if you aren't allowing just the pacing of surprises and jokes to like carry you over. Like how many times people just get knocked out and then we're just into the next scene in this movie is like more times than you count on one hand, which is fine, and it's not something that, you know, decreases my enjoyment of it. It's just all of these weird, the way physics works and the what plot holes we do care about and what plot holes we don't care about sort of came together. So I had a great time in Thor Ragnarok both times, but I'm unsure what the purpose of Thor Ragnarok was. And it's not that, you know, in this...
Can the purpose just be a good time?
I was building to
that.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
It's not that there can't be a singular good time superhero franchise movie. I just don't think the Marvel Cinematic Universe needs that. It's different from its goals as a cinematic universe. It's the reigning champion of everything's leading somewhere, and they're less than a year away from the finish line. I was kind of hoping for this to be slightly more of a victory lap in that sense. Like, I think Iron Man 2, or Iron Man 3 and Captain America Civil War were, where they made a conclusion out of the three-story arc for that one character. Captain America, you know, joins the real world and has something to fight for. And Iron Man 3 is like a PTSD Tony Stark dealing with the fact that he's always trying to fix himself and like is scarred by it. Go ahead.
Nope, go ahead.
Oh, in comparison, this Thor arc leaves all the characters stagnant except for the new one, Tessa Thompson, which is fine because the movie works from moment to moment and is vastly entertaining, and Thor fights Hulk and it's great, but it doesn't push the pieces forward as serialized fiction does, the best serialized fiction does for me.
Okay, I super disagree and I want to talk about it, but okay. Should we talk about it in the storm?
If we need to, then that will be our cue. Guys, if you haven't seen Thor Ragnarok and care about not being spoiled, jump off now. Okay, Joanna, go for it.
I am the God of Thunder, brother, the first and the last, and you're in my way. All right. Okay, so the difference between... I know I'm not going to tell you anything you don't already know about the Marvel franchise, but the difference between what they have to do with Thor here and what they had to do with Captain America and Iron Man is Captain America and Iron Man were characters that were working for the most part, and Thor was not. And so what this movie did, and rather than sort of push the needle in a direction, it rebooted the character. That's a word that like they've been using. It reboots Thor and it reboots Hulk, to be honest with you. So that I think they're very different on the other side of this movie, not because they've gone through like a huge character journey, but just sort of like this movie is just sort of like an Etch-a-Sketch. It's like, we fucked up. We fucked up the first two Thor movies. We didn't do it right. We're going to do it right this time. My suspicion, I know this having sort of pieced together interviews with Taika and stuff like that is like, you know, their original plan for Thor Ragnarok was going to be like just such a much more, in my opinion, boring, like, Infinity Stone based situation. Also, there was the plan for a while for Thor to be going around with Doctor Strange instead of Hulk. Like, God, that would have been a really terrible movie. But, like, I think it would have satisfied Dave, parts of Dave that likes, having puzzles to solve them, likes figuring out what one thing is leading to another.
Oh, it would have had way more Infinity Stones.
Right, which is why Dave likes Ultron more than the average human likes Ultron, because Dave's like, yes, but I see what they're doing with Ultron. They're pivoting to this and they're launching this. And like, that's something that you, I don't mean to speak for you, Dave, but I believe knowing you, like, that's something that you enjoy. And I think that's something that I don't get as much pleasure out of. And I think the average film goer does not get as much pleasure out of. So instead they're like, you know what? The things we need to accomplish in this movie are get the Tesseract off of Asgard, done. Sort of bury these bad Thor, like bury the bad association with Thor. Because I know a lot of people who are resistant to seeing this movie at all because they hated the Dark World so much. So bury the associations, reboot Thor into like a fun, funny character using the actual talents of Chris Hemsworth that they've not been using, and start this three movie arc that they have planned for the Hulk, where it's not just that the Hulk can only be the Hulk when he's raging out in a battle scene. The Hulk can be conversant and in scenes with other characters and that sort of stuff. So in that sense, I think they accomplished it. And then so what you see, though, I think is the vestigial, they have to do a Ragnarok because they called it Ragnarok. And so they had to do that. And so you get this whole Asgard plot that actually feels super divorced from the fun junk planet plot. And, you know, as compensation, we at least get Kate Blanchett with a CGI like cat suit, like doing as much as she possibly can with how little she has to do. But the Asgard stuff feels really separate, but it feels like necessary to leave it in so that they can fulfill the promise of this title that they put on their board, you know, 5 years ago or whatever. That's what I think is both good about and a leftover problem with Thor Ragnarok.
I don't disagree with you, but it still feels weird to have Thor Ragnarok have Thor not really be an active character. He moves. locations, but that's what happens to Thor. And Loki does his same arc he has for the past three Loki movies.
I disagree, because I think because the Dark World ended with Loki pulling a really shitty trick. So there wasn't, like, Loki was not redeemed at the end of Dark Worlds. And I think this is supposed to be a real, actual redemption for Loki in this movie for the first time.
So you think that he's not going to be the one that gives the Tesseract to Thanos?
I think he is going to be the one that gives the Tesseract to Thanos, definitely. But
so that
but it looks
puts him back in the villain
it
spot.
It looks like under duress to me. It looks like under duress to me, potentially to save the Asgardians on his ship. Like, that's what I think.
We'll get more into what's up with the ship later on, because you and I have differing opinions, or maybe the same opinion, about when that's going to go down. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's good, but it's not the Thor movie I wanted, in the sense that there isn't a ton of Thor. I mean, I have the same problem with most action comedy movies. It's like they're supposed to be slight. That's why, like,
yeah,
the continuity of Ghostbusters isn't, like, important to me. I don't know why I thought of Ghostbusters. Oh, Star Hemsworth. Got it. Okay, good. But yeah, it felt interesting that, like, I hear the argument that they had a Ragnarok based thing, and then they came in, they tried to make it something different, so now you have like a hybrid between those two things. I definitely think that did happen, but I also think that there could have been a moment where they're like, let's just change the title to, like, Planet Hulk.
Honestly, that's what they should have done. Well, they can't call it Planet Hulk, right, because of their deal with Universal, that, like, Hulk can't be the lead in a Marvel movie.
Sure, or Trash Planet, or something that, like...
Thor, colon, so, like, Trash Planet.
Yeah, they're in production for Avengers 4, and it's still called Untitled Avengers, and it sounds ridiculous every time Kevin Feige says it, but they're sticking to it.
Well, that's
because they're waiting to hold that title from us.
Well, but that's because they never... I mean, they called it Infinity War Part 2. I agree with you. I think it was... I honestly think it was rigid of them to not just be like, you know what... We shouldn't have called it. We got ahead of ourselves. We should not have called it Thor Ragnarok. It's not going to be Thor Ragnarok. It's going to be Thor Trash Planet.
Yeah. Or they keep it Thor Ragnarok and just don't do the Asgard thing and be like, no, it's about the Ragnarok of the character. That would work, and comics fans would accept
that.
The
Ragnarok was inside all us into those. All the time.
The Ragnarok was the friends we made along the way.
Exactly.
Would Norse mythology nerds be okay with that? I'm not sure. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I don't know. The snake doesn't have to, like, eat the sun, and then we all don't have to, like, be reborn out of the ocean, if I recall that happening. Or is that... Oh, does Odin have to hang, or is that a different thing?
I don't know.
At least we didn't have the giant snake. That's all I'm saying. Norse mythology, be damned.
I think I know the problem, though. Mm-hmm. It's because Thor, as a character in his own movies... has basically been learning the same lesson through all three films. And it's all about the responsibility of leadership and becoming, like, the, you know, the humble, worthy leader of the Asgardian people. But they've just, like, tweaked it a little bit each time, you know, where it was like the first one was about him, you know, being worthy of the hammer. And the second one was about him, you know, having some independence in what he, you know, being sort of worthy in the sense that he was willing to give up power. And then in the third one, it's about him learning that it really is just the friends we made along the way that are Asgard or whatever. So the trouble is that it's very cyclical. I feel like if they would have started with this one, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. They should have started with this one.
We'd all be all in on Thor.
Three fun, like, Thor would be our favorite character instead of our, like, kind of the worst Avenger, tiniest Avenger, baby art.
strongest Avenger.
One thing that, so I was listening to I always plug this podcast and our podcast, but they're just so good at what they do. But the Empire Magazine podcast had this really long spoiler special chat with Taika Waititi where he talked about how one of the, you know, to address Dave's concern about how scenes were ending with people getting knocked out. It's not just Loki. That happens, of course, to Thor a couple times. But he said the reason why Loki gets so beat up in this movie, starting with Thor, but then like the Doctor Strange stuff and all this stuff, is because Tom Hiddleston's character has always overshadowed Thor in Thor's own movie, that he's more compelling. I thought this was cool that Taika said this because it's true, but he said it about his like supposed star, that like the Loki character's always been more compelling, more powerful, more interesting, more whatever than Thor, and that they want to try to make Thor the most interesting character in his own movie. And to do that, you have to diminish Loki as much as possible, which they did. Loki is forever like, you know, like Doctor Strange is more powerful than Loki, or like Loki is afraid that Hulk is going to smash him, or, you know, like Thor outwits his brother, which is should never happen, but did.
Or
you know,
Valkyrie so like, kicks the shit out of him.
Yeah, exactly. So it's that was a conscious choice to sort of, you know, as much as we all like Tom Hiddleston and Loki, it's like, okay, you've dominated two Thor movies and an Avenger movie. Like you get to take the backseat on this one, buddy. We're gonna make your wig as greasy as possible, and you get to sit back there. So I thought that was interesting. Like an interesting conscious decision to try to write the balance and make Thor the star of his own movie. So
that is interesting.
Almost got there.
I think they got there. And also, you know, and the idea for all of this came from Hemsworth, right? Hemsworth went to Kevin Feige and was like, my character sucks and nobody likes my movies. Can we change everything? And Kevin Feige's like, okay.
Can we hire this weird guy from New Zealand?
Right. And like Hemsworth wants Taika, and like, you know, and so then it gets weird and funny, and they tear up everything you know about Thor, and then they just move on. And in a character that better fits the actor that they hired for it. You know, I'm sure there are, you know, maybe if they had cast Tom Hiddleston as Thor, you know, because he auditioned for it, maybe if it had been Tom Hiddleston, definitely Baby Arm's Tiniest Avenger as Thor, the Shakespearean tone would have worked better. But with Hemsworth, this is a much better thing to do with Hemsworth, just like far and away. So smart. So it feels like acknowledging a mistake, even though no one is going to, except for a little bit, Chris Hemsworth, come out and say that Thor the Dark World is like the worst Marvel movie. It's the worst Marvel movie. So, you know. But Dave,
even the spaceships are better in this one, because I was watching parts of Thor the Dark World again, and like the inside of the spaceship is just like a green screen bubble. Ugh. I hate it.
The only thing I miss from the original like Thor world that they like just said, fuck you, you're gone, you don't matter, is Kat Dennings. Like, import Kat Dennings back into the Sun World. She would have fit. She would have fit beautifully on Trash Planet. Like Natalie Portman can fuck off forever. You are a lovely performer and a great human being, but you never, ever fit in the MCU. And but just justice for Kat Dennings. So. Darcy. Justice for Darcy.
Maybe she could come back. She touched an Infinity Stone once or something.
Yeah, so the Collector has the ether? Okay. Don't worry. I know where they
are. Does he? Who knows?
I know where they are. I know where they all are. Except for... Oh. No. I do... Can we talk about Infinity Stones now? Or do you want to talk about them later? Neil, you get to decide.
Infinity Stones, go.
Well, Dave, will you give your idea of where you think the Soul Stone is, which I'm not saying is wrong. I'm just saying I have an alternative theory, but I want you to talk about yours.
I still think Heimdall has it, and therefore it is on the Asgard escape ship.
So you think the Tesseract and the Soul Stone are both on the escape ship? Loki has the Tesseract, Heimdall has the Soul Stone, and you still think it's in his eye?
No. There was a possibility at one point that I thought that maybe Odin had it behind his eye, but I still think of it because of his eyes. So his character poster, the color of his eyes, which has slightly changed ever since the Dark World when we knew Infinity Stones were a thing, and the magic that he draws on the stones to open the Asgard hideaway place, they're all the soul gem orange, and that's just this reoccurring thing. And Heimdall has these incredible... He might be, like... He's as powerful as the other Asgardians we see in this movie, and might be slightly more powerful than them because he could see across space-time and port somebody's consciousness there, which is something we haven't seen anybody but like actual like wizards do before. We saw Doctor Strange do it, so it feels like, you know, it's not a big thing, but in the context of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it's a big thing. I think that Heimdall might still have the Soul Stone.
Okay. So
in his soul.
In his soul. So Doctor Strange has the Time Stone. We should say really quickly that the Russo brothers, who are directing the two Avengers movies, Infinity War and the Untitled One, have said that Infinity War is like a heist movie of sorts, with Thanos tracking down the various Infinity Stones and presumably killing people along the way. But will they stay dead? We don't know. So we think the ether, which is which one, Dave?
That's the red stuff from Thor.
No, oh, sorry. Dark which World. Stone is that?
Oh, Power Stone, I think.
Okay, so Power Stone, ether.
Oh, wait, no. Reality, ether is reality. The gem, the purple gem right. from the orb is the Power Stone.
Okay, so ether, reality, stone is with the Collector, we think. Tesseract is with Loki. Time Stone is with Doctor Strange. Power Stone is with the Nova Corps. And what am I missing? Oh, Vision, the one that's in Vision's forehead.
It's a Mind Stone.
Yeah. And that's it, right?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so we know everything is, except for the Soul Stone. We still don't know. Dave was certain that it would be revealed in Heimdall. It's not, which was a terrific guess. Something that I...
Well, okay, hear me out in my craziness of having covered this movie for a long time. I think before the breakdown that Chris Hemsworth doesn't like the character, but when they still had Ragnarok, I think we would have been dealing with the Soul Stone basically taking the place of the Eternal Flame. They have very similar MacGuffin powers in like being able to command things between living and dead and observe them, which is presumably what the Soul Stone power would be. Heimdall's using the observe, not the command part, because he's benevolent. But I thought that it was going to come, Hela would come to get the stone and use the stone to resurrect all of her, you know, what's it people and her wolf. And then basically everything that we thought the Eternal Flame did in this current cut would have just been a different MacGuffin with a different complementary to Hela's green power color.
I hear everything you say. It all makes sense to me. You're probably right. But the bottom line is we don't know where the Soul Stone is for sure now. So it could be anywhere. So if it's not with Heimdall, let's just say, something that I learned about the Soul Stone that I thought was interesting is that it's sort of like a sentient stone.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what if the Soul Stone is actually like another character and one we know, but like don't know that it's the Soul Stone?
So like my Heimdall argument, but with none of the color theory.
Right.
Okay, yeah, maybe. I mean, it could have been the Soul Stone was Adam Warlock, but I mean, obviously it's not going to be Adam Warlock because that's not working with the time things. But it has been possible for the Soul Stone to sort of dip in and out of existence without people noticing it, at least in the comics. And I guess now in the MCU, since we don't know where it is. And supposedly Thor has been looking for it in between movies and found nothing, as he tells the skeleton at the beginning of the
right.
movie.
I mean, that it feels like to me the plot, the original plot of Thor Ragnarok is the story that Thor tells the skeleton at the beginning of the movie. Instead, right. They're like, we're just doing something else. So it might be a fun exercise for all of you listening who love this sort of Dave Gonzalez-esque Sherlock Holmesian exploration of the Marvel Universe. to give us your thoughts and theories on where you think the Soul Stone is. That might be fun to do. So if you want to email us, stormofspoilers@gmail.com, I'm happy to make that an ongoing hunt until we find out for sure in 2018.
Maybe the Soul Stone is the friends we made along the way.
Neil, I'm putting a moratorium on that phrase. You're no longer allowed to do that joke.
Guys, this is my only move right now.
No, you have so here's many a question. Jokes. All right.
All right, here's a question before we take a short mid-episode break. Do we think that this whole question is going to be moot because the mystery is what we're expecting and we'll just see where the Soul Stone is in the first Infinity War trailer?
Wait, I have a question.
Oh, okay.
Is Hela coming back for Infinity War?
No, I don't think so.
Not that we know for sure.
Okay, because, I mean, you could theoretically, if she went down with Asgard but somehow maintained the flame, she could have a crystallized version of the flame, and she brings it to Thanos to get revenge.
Oh, I mean, there's like, man, I wish that they find a way to put her into.
Because doesn't she have like a thing with Thanos, Hela? Aren't they like tight?
Well, people were speculating for a while that Hela would take the place of Death, where Thanos in the Infinity Gauntlet comic book storyline is like in love with the physical embodiment of Death and is trying to impress her with his godlike powers. And that's why he needs the Infinity Gauntlet. That seems to have changed for the Infinity War movie, at least as far as I know, and production on the first one is pretty much wrapped up. And they think they're well through production on the second one. I don't know how long it's supposed to last, but it's not out of the question that Hela shows up. It's just not something that we've had confirmed or hinted at by any official channels.
Okay. I'm just saying that could be a thing.
Yeah.
It needs to be back, period. If Kevin Feige could come out and say that, what is it, Korg and Meek are definitely going to have something else to do in the MCU. Yeah, someone needs to step forward and say that Kate Blanchett's going to be back.
That CGI, suit, man. Something that I thought was interesting that was pointed out to me in the Empire spoiler special is that Kate Blanchett originally, this is from Dan Jolin from Empire who visited the set, and he said originally Kate Blanchett's plan was to have like a Cockney accent through the whole thing. That's what she was doing when he was on set. And it's still there, like, occasionally. And it's there in the trailer, actually. So I don't know how much, like, ADR happened or, like, what happened. But she, like, that was her plan, was to do, like, base it on these, like, 70s Cockney punks. But I don't know. Maybe they were just like, Tessa Thompson's accent is too tough, so let's just simplify all other accents instead.
Have you guys been keeping up with The Flash?
Not since last sort of spoke, no.
Okay, so last night's episode, Katie Sackhoff is playing a evil meta vamping superhero or villainous with a British accent. So I'm like, oh man, I'm kind of glad that Kate Blanchett didn't do that now, because I know what that looks like, and it is weird, Starbuck. But yeah, I want to see her, how that character and that portrayal fits in with another group of things. Like, I'm glad that she's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I don't think she's best served as that character in Thor. Like, I want to see like Hela fight other heroes.
I mean, basically, like Cate Blanchett was just there to make Asgard not like unendurably boring, and to like sashay down a catwalk every single time she walked into a scene. And I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they were like, yeah. I feel like Taika, well, I know that Taika was super bored by all the Asgardian stuff he had to do. And so I really do feel like Cate Blanchett is this gift of like, this is the most interesting we could make this. We give you Cate Blanchett. And I'm like, thank you for that gift.
Sorry, Carl Urban, that you got probably cast before we knew exactly what we were going to do with Scourge.
All right. Do we want to take that break and then take listener questions?
Let's do it. All right. Who wants to read the first listener question?
Neil, do you want to do it?
Yay. Yes. This first email comes from Zoe in Australia. What are your thoughts on Loki and his arc during the movie? I thought it was one of the most compelling ones, as he finally ends up in a good place by the end of it, and is probably a good guy, which I have been hoping for a while now. I have bad news for you, Zoe. He's a trickster, and he's been tricking us this whole time, and there's no way he's still a good guy. We have to assume at all times that Loki is going to do something terrible. I love the theory that we talked about in the last segment that he somehow did. What, did we talk about this yet, or are we not gonna, or have we not talked about it yet? About Loki handing over stuff to Thanos.
We did. So it's in the Infinity War trailer that hasn't been released wide, but has been.
Joanna officially saw, so she could talk about it.
Anyway.
What? I get allowed to get mad at you for going to Comic-Con, like, or D, no, it was D23. Yeah. Oh, I'm always allowed to get mad at you for going to D23.
Why?
It's like the posh Comic-Con.
It's in Anaheim. That's punishment enough. All right, so
be careful, you might get banned.
Yeah, so D23 is where I saw that footage. They showed it again at Comic-Con. They have not released it to wider audiences. We think we know why. We'll get to that a little later. But in that footage, we see Loki holding up the Tesseract. So holding up probably means he's giving it to Thanos, because Thanos is taller than he is. So holding up the Tesseract, not looking happy about it. So, like, to me, that looks like maybe he's giving it under duress. Or maybe he's, like, doing it to save his own... Maybe he's doing it to save his own skin, like Thanos... Because Thanos has reason to be pissed at Loki after the Avengers, after, like, Thanos failed him as, like, a lieutenant in the Avengers, basically. So maybe to save his own skin, or possibly more altruistically to save the other Asgardians aboard, he gives the Tesseract to Thanos. And then that footage starts with Thor flying through space. So, like, you know, everyone's pretty sure that A, that's Thanos' ship in the first end of credits sequence in Thor Ragnarok, and B, either Thor is getting his ass tossed off that ship, or that ship is blowing up. And if that ship blows up, all those Asgard, like, I don't like that.
Here's a compelling argument for the ship. Actually, I don't know if it goes one way or the other, but it's a piece of interesting information I learned today reading about Thor Ragnarok. There was a deleted post-credits scene that actually had the Grandmaster sneaking onto the Asgardian refugee ship and being like, I haven't heard of this Earth, let's keep a low profile, and, you know, getting underneath a blanket a la Thor's you can't see my face when I do this plot. And so that would imply that they probably wouldn't be blown up. But I guess that was left out of the movie, so maybe they're still in jeopardy.
Well, the comparison I've heard is that if they do that, that's basically like an Aliens 2 to Aliens 3 thing. Like, you can't blow up Hicks and Newt. Like, you can't spend a lot of Thor Ragnarok saving these Asgardians and then blowing them up, right? Like, that's just, you can't do that. You can, but you shouldn't. And so I think Thor's, I mean, there's a lot of... In that footage, there's a lot of space detritus also, so, like, it does feel like a spaceship got blown up, but maybe they'll all be, like, huddled aboard the Chitauri ship that Thanos is on, so they'll be, like, unsafe but safe, and then Thor gets tossed into outer space.
Hostages. We call them hostages.
Slaves with jobs.
Or prisoners, maybe. slaves with jobs.
Prisoners with jobs. There it is. but, yeah, so that's... I don't know. I'm hoping for a Loki redemption and then a Loki death, just because, not because I need Loki to be good, but just because for the reason Dave was saying, that, like, I don't need to see another retread. So maybe Loki pretends to be bad, becomes Thanos's lieutenant again, and then tries to betray Thanos. Like, he's a double agent, something like that. I don't know.
I think there's room for Loki to just be good guy and still have to give over the Tesseract. If you think about it, Thanos has zero Infinity Stones right now. When we started, Thanos had 2 Infinity Stones. He gave them both to Loki, and Loki did not come back with either of them. So it'd be interesting to see if he's even wants that help. But either way, Zoe, I'm glad you think that there's an arc that made him Loki finally a good guy. If they're able to stick with it, then I'll accept that Thor Ragnarok had one arc.
Should we place bets? If there's one person, and it's not going to be Thor, there's one person who on that ship who's going to die just to kick off Infinity War to be like, Thanos means business. Who would you place your
Heimdall with the Soul Stone?
You
in the conservatory.
In the conservatory with the Thanos. Okay. So you're saying Heimdall. Neil, do you want to place your death stakes on someone?
Well, what's the little guy's name who they thought was dead, but
Meek.
He was really...
Meek.
Yeah, Meek. Meek might actually die.
That's
no.
Low stakes.
I think Heimdall is probably your best choice.
Okay. And we don't think it's probably not going to be Valkyrie because, like, Tessa Thompson has talked about wanting to do, like, an all-female... Valkyrie's making it. My point.
She's making it to the end of all the phases, if I have anything to do with it.
All the time and space. Well,
when we used to talk about Infinity War way back when, around Age of Ultron time, I kept saying, like, a really good badass thing to have Thanos do would be to just immediately reclaim the Mind Stone from Vision.
Yeah.
Because Vision's, like, the super powerful thing. Just come down, rip it out of his head. Everyone's like, oh my god, Thanos. They've replaced that with the equal thing, which is like there's a ship of gods and the Hulk, and they have one,
the
possibly
Hulk.
Two Infinity Stones. So he's able to just like take that ship, take everybody prisoner, kick the Hulk and Thor out into space, and then just go about his business. I think that'll deliver the same message that we're dealing with the big bad.
I'm betting on this. I'm betting... It's Loki. I'm betting Loki dies right at the beginning of Infinity War. And I'll be devastated. But, yeah.
Man, I got to look through that grainy Infinity War leaked footage and see if you could see the background where Loki's out.
Is that why we haven't seen the Infinity War trailer yet?
Oh,
what's the reason why we haven't seen the Infinity War trailer?
We can get to that. That's another question. Hold on. Where is it?
Is that the later question?
Yeah, but I can't find it right now.
Oh, yeah, it's at the end. That was the one where I was like, Infinity War spoilers. But maybe we should just go for it, guys.
Let's do it.
If you've come this far,
it's time. Do you
want to
read that email from Kim?
Yes, here's the email from Kim. Kim would like to know if we have thoughts about the mystery of the missing Sif. Yes, Lady Sif was not around when the Warriors 3 were destroyed very easily. Like, where the hell was she when Hela decimated the Warriors 3? Also, super spoilery, but in the Avengers Infinity War trailer, Thor's eyes are both present when rescued by Star-Lord and company after the implied destruction of the Asgardian rescue vessel, way after Hela takes out his right eye. Discuss. So,
I'm gonna talk about the Sif thing, then I'm going to let Dave take the eye thing. Taika Waititi has said that they tried to get Jamie Alexander, but she was too busy with Blind Spot. And I feel like they tried to get her to kill her. She was like, no. So
I'm too busy with Blind Spot.
So the good news with that is that Lady Sif could come back. Yeah, but I don't think they should bring her
but
back.
But like best case scenario, she's another like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode.
Yeah, probably. So that's the but you know, that's what Taika said. They tried to get Jamie Alexander and she was busy with Blind Spot. If he's telling the truth, that's what happened. Div?
The eye is, I think, the reason we haven't seen the Infinity Wars trail footage outside of these very exclusive engagements.
Oh my god.
Because they're gonna go CGI it out. They're gonna black it out. Much like how in the Thor trailer the whole God of Thunder descending on the Rainbow Bridge. Money Shot has him with both eyes glowing in the trailer, but by the time it ends up in the movie, he has one eye gone. They have painted out a black scorch mark on his eye, and then later we see that he has a very Odin-like eye patch, which is really funny because Anthony Hopkins doesn't wear an eye patch at all in this movie. I focused on that so closely the second time, and that entire thing's fake. So that means that, like, all bets are off with how many eyes people have and who's wearing eye patches in any footage and any set footage you ever see anywhere. My guess is we'll see the Infinity Wars trailer now, A, because it starts with Thor in space and we've sort of connected that dot now that everybody's seen Thor, But also, they could go back and add in that layer of an eye patch Thor and not be actively spoiling one of their upcoming movies.
Yeah, and reminder that Nick Fury has an eye patch. So we might get two eye patch individuals, or Nick Fury might be at the end of Winter Soldier when Nick Fury puts on sunglasses. So maybe, can't remember. Is Nick Fury even in? He must be in Ultron, right?
Nick Fury's in Ultron, yeah. He's like in the cabin. And he's like, you guys are my last line of defense.
Yeah. Okay. That's right. Okay. Anyway, they signed Samuel Jackson to a ridiculously long deal, but they're still judiciously keeping him out of some movies so they can keep Nick Fury in the franchise as long as possible. Okay.
Well, he's coming back around for Captain Marvel. It's going to be big.
It's going to be great. All right. So the eyeball thing. Yeah, there's a lot in the Thor trailer, but I agree with Dave that the reason we haven't seen the Infinity War footage, for wider audiences is because they're now going to go in and CG out Chris Hemsworth's eyeball, or put that black mark over it, or the eye patch, whatever. So there's that. They didn't want to spoil the end of Thor Ragnarok at D23 or Comic-Con or anything like that. There's a lot of stuff in the trailer that's not in the movie, and I did finally get a more convincing reason why, in the trailer, Hela and, Thor have it out in an alleyway, and that's where his hammer gets broken, and in the movie, it's on a grassy cliff. The reason is because, I guess, so in the original version, they had Odin in New York as like, as Dave said, Dave said that.
Hoboden.
Yeah, Hoboden. I like it. Dave said that there were set photos of him as homeless. Like he was like a crazy raving sort of like Fisher King kind of figure. So homeless in New York and then he dies. And what that does narratively is it makes Loki a really bad dude. If he banished his father to Earth and then his father went crazy and his father died. And so instead you have Odin like make this choice to go to Norway and look really beautiful and like his hair is all dreadlocked and gorgeous and like he's wearing a nice linen outfit and stuff like that. And so then Loki got the better of Odin for a while, but then Odin took back control of the situation to a certain extent. So that is why those changes were made. It tested poorly with audiences, I guess. So I thought that
they wanted to make Loki less of a dick.
Yeah, make Loki less of a dick and make it not so sad when Odin dies. Make it more Mufasa-esque. Well, actually, Mufasa dies is very sad.
It's more whimsical. It's a whimsical death. He's like accepting his death.
That one hit me like the egg equinox. It was just like the right non sequitur just completely derailed my train of thought. And I'm like, yeah, wildebeest stampede. That was really sad. And then they threw him off. Just threw him right off the cliff.
Man.
Well, that makes me want to read this email from Carolina. Who says, I've seen some people on Twitter voicing their disappointment over some aspects of Thor Ragnarok, saying that the tone was almost too heavy on comedy, to the point that none of the more serious moments / stuff with consequences like Odin dying or Asgard being destroyed truly landed. Someone mentioned that, especially in relation to Thor and Loki, that sure, we all enjoyed the brotherly banter, and Hemsworth and Hiddleston were certainly at the top of their game, but because of that reliance on comedy and the expectation of yet another joke coming any second, the more subtle emotional stuff got almost discarded, e.g. the conversation right before the get help gag. So what's your take on this? Do you think it's just nitpicking or is there something to it? I just want to say really quickly, I think that this has always been how Taika Waititi has Trojan horsed emotion into his movies is through comedy. If you haven't seen Hunt for the Wilder People or Boy, those are good examples of that. But I also think that I would have been extremely uninterested in an overwrought and overdramatic and overemotional moments in this movie. That's what the play at the beginning of the movie is making fun of. It's making fun of Thor: The Dark World, which had plenty of that and was terrible. So, you know,
yeah, dying, and both have a Hemsworth. So,
dying Loki in Thor: The Dark World, dying Frigga, all of that is just. It doesn't make it a better movie. It makes it a well, it's not the reason why it's a crap movie, but that movie's crap, and all the like emotionally overwrought, Loki's really upset that his mom's dead stuff didn't make it any better. So I didn't miss it. I didn't miss it. I thought the irreverent tone was fine. How about you guys? Did you miss the weightier impact of things?
Not really, because I had rewatched the other Thor movies, so like that's where those go. That's where those emotions go. And I thought that there is a lot of this movie that dispatches very easily with the old Thor mythos. Like the Warriors 3 really got kind of a short shrift at the end, or the beginning of this movie, their end. You get it. But I actually thought the Odin stuff played pretty well. Like it made sense. It was good. It was a good way to end that character's arc. Three movie arc essentially, and a good way to sort of finally free Thor of the constant daddy issues that permeate the first two movies. So if you're looking for a super broody Thor movie, there's two of them out there.
Yeah,
you can go watch those, I guess.
None of the points that Carolina mentions, Carolina's a state, it's probably Carolina. Now I've probably offended all the Carolinas. There's like, I don't mind Odin and Asgard dying, being destroyed. I do think that there is a lost moment where Bruce Banner decides he's willing to risk being the Hulk forever.
Yeah.
That I might feel like we needed that moment later on in the story, depending on how it shapes up. But really, just at the time that decision comes in this movie, we're so preoccupied with different battles and flashy things that it's sort of boiled down to two shots of him leaning over a steering wheel, like furrowing his brow. And I think I might regret losing that, but for the most part, the emotional beats that were there worked for me really well.
I 100% agree with you on that. I hadn't thought about that, and I think you're totally right that we could have used that. I think that decision was lost on a lot of people. That even though he says, like, next time I turn into the Hulk, I might never come back. Like, I don't think audiences are really like, oh, he just sacrificed his entire Banner. He just potentially killed Banner in order to save the day. And especially because, to Carolina's point, and the reason I think it might be Carolina is there's a K in there. That's why. It's not C like the state. It's K. Then he immediately Looney Tunes out of the plane onto the Rainbow Bridge, right? Like, that's a Looney Tunes moment. So it's not just, like, followed by a get help joke. A get help is also kind of a Looney Tunes moment, but, like, it's a real slapstick beat. And so that any sort of, and even as great as I think Tessa Thompson is in this movie, even Valkyrie's Valkyrie doesn't get a moment to register that until he comes back up. And then she's like, oh, he was the Hulk. The whole time.
I knew him from somewhere.
But yeah, I don't know. It's that's interesting. And the other someone emailed us about this. It didn't make into our final cut, but so I apologize. I don't have the name in front of me, but someone emailed that they really hated the Banner and Natasha stuff that's in Ultron. And so they really hated that it was brought back for this, that it's Natasha's, the video of Black Widow that sort of gets Hulk to finally de-Hulk. But I thought that was sort of the most emotionally resonant moment of the movie. I like the Hulk, the Banner Natasha stuff. I know a lot of people hate the Black Widow Ultron everything. But I think that, like, their relationship isn't necessarily, doesn't have to be thrown out with the bathwater of some of the other stuff of Black Widow. The fact that these two people could have a connection. I think they even have a connection in Avengers. So I don't think it's, anyway, point being. The way that Mark Ruffalo played his, like, frightened bewilderment at how long he had been gone, I thought was really, really good. And then it gets silly, yes, because then you have the scene where he's, like, wearing Tony's clothes and they're sitting on the stoop, which was most largely improvised of Taika throwing lines at them and stuff like that. But I think in the Quinjet, like, all of that is some really good emotional stuff from Mark Ruffalo. So
yeah, it makes sense because I think that it happens so quickly, and this may actually be Carolina's point or the point of the people who are talking to her about this. is that it happens very quickly, so it's easy to sort of overlook the fact that they're closing down that arc from that previous film. Because they're closing down the Hulk went missing and remained Hulk and couldn't be broken of that by just Thor doing the sunset thing. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of closing down that like Hulk out there on his own thing. And it feels like a very efficient way to do that. So to some people that might feel slight, like that might feel like them skimming over it, but I don't know. You can't really do like 30 minutes of that in this movie. So you got to make it happen quickly. And I think it works really well.
Yeah. And I just think that Taika Waititi as a writer and director is more comfortable with comedy and pathos sort of just existing so close to each other. And I think that's, for me, that's one of his like genius things that he does. But if other people would prefer them more separate, then I could see why they might have an issue with it. And I was talking about this exact thing on Twitter a couple days ago, and I was like, the only Marvel movie that has gotten to me like really emotionally is the Bucky Cap stuff. And I don't even mean that in a like, oh my god, they should be gay together way. Like, also the Cap and Peggy stuff. Basically anything involving Cap has gotten to me more than anything else they've tried to do. So more than like Tony's PTSD or I can't think of other things they've tried, but they've tried, you know, like, but
Doctor Strange has some real shaky hands.
Oh yeah, his hands are so shaky. Remember how Rachel McAdams was in a Marvel movie? I don't. All right.
Not particularly. Okay, we have one more question. And this is a good sort of, you know, almost wrapping up thing. But this is an email from Luke. And Luke asks, or says at this point, I like the early deconstruction of colonialism with Hela revealing the true history of the Nine Realms. But isn't that theme undermined a little at the end when Thor, the son of the previous ruler / beneficiary of all those wrongs, still ends up the de facto king? Seem like they were possibly setting up Heimdall for a leadership role with his heroism in Thor's absence, which would have been an extra nail in the coffin to the Asgardian monarchy and better suited to those themes. So do you think... Yeah, what do you guys think?
I like the whole... The mural coming down, I thought that was really cool. To like, you know, stop and think of like how it is that Asgard looks the way that it does. And also someone on Twitter pointed out to us, tweeted at us, and I'm sorry, I don't have the name in front of me, that, maybe this casts a new light on when Odin banishes, Thor in the first movie, because maybe Thor was reminding him a little too much of himself. And he was like, you need to go and learn some things so you don't repeat my mistakes, as a conqueror. So yeah, I like all of that. And the last thing one of the last things I'll say is that I thought this was the best Idris Elba, performance of the year. And he had four. I haven't seen, it's Molly's Game, right? That he's in. I haven't seen that one yet, but, out of three, this is my favorite, best Heimdall's ever looked. I would be for Heimdall leading the people, but you know, I think Thor has been through enough and learned enough that he has earned that chair. He didn't have to come back from Trash Planet. Like, the whole reason that those Asgardians were shepherded off the planet was because Thor came back for them. So that, you know, that's a kingly thing to do.
I'm waiting for them to establish the earthly realm of Asgard, and that way Thor could just fly back and forth to his own little town/kingdom whenever he wants.
Yeah, or maybe that they didn't make Heimdall the leader because he's going to get killed and he's got the Soul Stone.
Mm.
Yeah, good argument, Neil. I like your points.
Something that Taika sort of arrogantly said in this interview that I listened to was every character in this movie is the best version of this character we've seen so far. This is the best version of Hulk. This is the best version of Thor. This is the best version of Heimdall. I don't know about Loki. I don't know if I would agree with him about Loki. And then he's like, this is the best version of Odin. And I agree, like, Someone, I think it's the best version of Doctor Strange too. Someone said, a friend of mine was like, the most genius thing that Taika Waititi does in this movie is he actually gets Anthony Hopkins to act. Like, right? Hasn't it, like, you know, much love and respect to Sir Anthony Hopkins, but it seems like he's been sleepwalking through, I would say.
To be fair to Anthony Hopkins, I did not see the last Transformers movie, so maybe he's brilliant in it.
Maybe.
I saw that Transformers movie. He called in from like six states away.
Yeah. So usually, you know, there's a large phone bill for when Anthony Hopkins is in a movie because he phones it all in.
Yeah, you get it. It's a good metaphor.
Trying to plus that Neil joke did not work. And Westworld as well. I would say as much as I liked him is just sort of Anthony Hopkins showing up to read the phone book. Anthony Hopkins showing up to read the phone book is more interesting than what most actors can achieve, but it's still not Anthony Hopkins acting. And in this movie, like, from the jump when he gets to pretend to be Loki, so you get a comedy Anthony Hopkins, and then like even all the stuff on the like, are you the god of hammers? It's a great line with a great delivery. I liked all of the Hopkins stuff.
I have a theory.
It's a demon? Okay, go ahead.
No. Taika was like, oh, I could just add that eye patch later. And Anthony Hopkins is like, you mean I'm already dressed for set? And he's like, you're already dressed for set, Anthony. And he's like, bully.
You think that Anthony showed up, Sir Anthony showed up in that suit? Like, you think that suit is Sir Anthony's? Then they would just have
like that whole linen ensemble?
Yeah. That like,
yeah.
Well, I imagine it's either, if it isn't his then, it's his now. Like, why else phone yourself into movies like this if you can't keep the wardrobe? Just like he owns that manservant robot from the last Transformers movie now.
Or maybe it's just like not having to wear that fucking armor. You know what I mean? Like, and the same is true for Chris Hemsworth. They're like, oh, we don't have to wear this like bullshit, like crazy cape shit. Thank you very much. I don't want to. It's getting in the way of me acting. Anyway.
Everyone got to do what they wanted except for Tom Hiddleston. And they're like, you know what? It's been a while since we gave you that big horn helmet.
But you're going to use it to fight.
Yeah, the horn helmet is fun. Where do you think, Dave, where do you think that shot of Loki throwing the knives in the trailer went? What is that about?
I don't know. I have a lot of questions about how Loki flies a giant transport through the Devil's Anus, which we were just told can only be flown through by specialized ships. And in the time period that it would take to get to Asgard, considering Valkyrie says it would take 9 months otherwise. So I have a lot of questions about what happens in that point of the movie. But I'm
I have a lot of
questions
about what happens in the Devil's Anus.
Yeah, exactly. And they come out and they're sleeping, but then they just drift immediately to Asgard and they're awake. It's all, there are seams on this movie that it's just, I think, a testament to the kind of filmmaker that we're dealing with that it, does you don't really see them because the movie is so well paced. But like, I'm guessing there was more with Loki on the trash planet. Like, I really feel like hearing Jeff Goldblum talk about stuff, I feel like we lost little bits of the revolution, quote unquote, mm-hmm. just because it didn't, you know, didn't add up for time, which I understand, but I would guess that's where it would be.
Is there one thing that we haven't talked about yet in this movie that you guys want to talk about before we peace out? I'll go first.
Go.
We just haven't talked about Jeff Goldblum yet. So, say that like Jeff Goldblum, Goldblum showed up. I'm not sure he knew that he was making a movie. I think he just Goldblumed his way through the whole thing. Rachel House, who plays, Topaz? I just made that up. I don't remember what her character's name is.
She has the melting wand.
She does have the melting
wand. She's his henchwoman. Rachel House has been in every Taika Waititi movie, and she's amazing. Eagle versus Shark, Hunt for the Wilder People, et cetera, et cetera. So I was really happy to see her in there. And I liked everything that they did. All of that was great. Except for I agree with a lot of people, including the great Helen O'Hara of the Empire Film Podcast. I'm done with space floozies as well. Space floozies? Unless you start having dude space floozies to go with the lady space floozies, I'm done with it. Guardians. We just keep seeing these space floozies. I don't like it. So
yeah, let's get a little equality.
Look,
yeah,
look whatever. How progressive Earth looks in comparison to all the space floozies.
It's true. It's very true.
Yeah, I think my ultimate takeaway from this movie is that if you watched the trailer and thought, oh, Jeff Goldblum, awesome. Mark Mothersbaugh's soundtrack, awesome. All the things you thought were going to be awesome in Thor Ragnarok turned out to actually be awesome in the movie. So, it's just great.
That's actually a pretty good way of putting it. And by not hiding the biggest secret the movie has, which is that Hulk is the champion, it really delivers on exactly what people who are at least aware of Taika Waititi's movies were expecting, I think, which is good in comparison to other Thor movies, which often don't deliver on the very promising directions their directors take them in. Or in case of Age of Ultron, robot mythology.
All right.
Oh, man.
Tessa Thompson.
Age of Ultron.
You were great.
Oh, she was so great.
So, Joanna, considering that we need Age of Ultron to get to Thor Ragnarok, have you come around on needing Age of Ultron yet?
Well, I don't know that I ever said we don't need it. I just think it's a terrible movie.
I kept saying we're gonna reevaluate it when we know where we were going with all
but
of this,
we
and we're
cave
pieces
scene,
in
that
there.
Cave scene in Ultron has nothing to do with this movie. Like they made Joss Whedon put that in there because they thought they needed it for whatever they thought they were gonna do with Thor, and then they just went back to the drawing board with that. So no, mistakes were made in Ultron, so many of them, including that Thor in the cave scene. Remember how he just goes away and then he comes back? It's so stupid.
He's like, I know what we need to do now. And then in this movie, he's like, yeah, I didn't find anything.
Yeah, I did that, but it was nothing. So don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Fought some robots.
Ultron, you also need Ultron to get to Captain America Civil War. And I quite liked Captain America Civil War. So it's not that, like, if I like any movie that comes after Ultron, I have to say Ultron is good. It's bad. Ultron's bad, but they've recovered nicely from it. I will say that.
That's fair.
Here's my question. Do you think, Ultron is part of this legacy of Marvel, of an era when Edgar Wright left Ant-Man and Joss Whedon left the House of Marvel in a huff and all this stuff happened and the reputation Marvel got was it stifles the creativity of its filmmakers. Seeing this movie be as Taika Waititi as it can be, seeing what we've seen of Black Panther, which looks as Ryan Coogler as it can be, do you think that Marvel has escaped that particular reputation?
Nope.
Okay.
Because the Russo brothers are the new template, and they have two of the biggest ones coming up, and they're going to look like nothing. I'm sure they're going to look beautiful in their own little way, but they're going to look like Marvel nothing. Marvel told everybody to make it look like Jon Favreau until Joss Whedon came along. And then they told everybody to make it look like Joss Whedon until the Russo brothers came along. And now they're like, but maybe we'll let other people try things. But the Russo brothers, this is what it looks like now. So I think Infinity War is going to look very bland. And then I think we're out of it.
But you're talking about, like, look versus tone.
Maybe similarly.
I mean, I think Civil War in some tone, like when you're not, like, having Spider-Man or Ant-Man or whatever do some fun shit. I'll lay that at the feet of Civil War. Winter Soldier, like, for however, like, staid and restrained it is, it's in a genre, which is, like government espionage, paranoid spy thriller. And I think it's a very neat execution of that. I do agree that the Russos are their workmen directors.
Everything the Russo brothers did on Community show that they knew what the difference between making fun of like a trope was and what that trope actually meant and how to execute it. And that's all their film directing has been. Is they know what a thriller should look like, they know what a comic book splash page should look like, and they know how to technically execute that. That's different than having a director who has a vision, who's like, I'm going to do this improv comedy,
and blah, blah, blah. If you've got the staid Russo lack of vision, if you want to call it that, spine that goes through the movie, right? So in your Captain Americas and in your Avengers. And then you've got these sort of fun, I mean, I don't really know what Peyton Reed's thing is, so I can't talk to Ant-Man at all. But you've got Black Panther and you've got Thor Ragnarok and you've got, Spider-Man Homecoming, which is like a fun John Hughesian thing. And you've got like, you know, these other side things. So you've got like a spine, and then you've got these other things coming off of it. And so then Marvel allows for James Gunn to do whatever, or Taika to do whatever within reason, right? But then it does come back to this one thing that glues it all together.
I guess it's shading, which I like, and it's allowing, you know, some more directorial thing, but it's not like what Fox is doing with like the new X-Men, where they're like, this one's a horror movie.
Oh, but like, that looks that terrible.
That was more the direction that I thought it was going to go in. I thought they were going to diversify and being like, what, we have three movies a year? They don't all have to be, you know, giant save the world climax CGI battles, but apparently they do for a while.
All right, Neil, what do you think? Do you think that Marvel has sort of redeemed itself from that era of Edgar Wright and Joss Whedon and all of that?
I think Dave made an excellent point there at the end about the whole, they're still sort of cutting from the same template, but I think they are making a concerted effort to change, which is good. I mean, I wish they would have done it before Edgar Wright left Ant-Man, but you know, different times. So,
I think the main issue there with Edgar Wright is like, right, Edgar Wright was brought on when Jon Favreau and Louis Leterrier were hired to do Iron Man and Hulk. That's when Edgar Wright was hired to do Ant-Man. And so at that time, they didn't have the plan for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So these directors were promised the ability to make a movie that was just their movie because they weren't blending them together yet.
Right.
And then the fact that like Edgar Wright's Ant-Man then came later at a time when it was a requirement. If you're a Marvel director, you have to pay the piper to a certain degree or play together in this larger sandbox. And Edgar Wright's like, that's not what I signed up for when I signed up. It was just like, hey, what's your take on this character? Knowing that I now have to make concessions to the larger vision, I don't want to do that. And so he left. And I understand why he left, and I understand what happened, but it all seems sort of like he was hired to do one job and then the job changed. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Well, it's the same with Patty Jenkins and Thor, right? Thor, The Dark World?
Well, I don't know what... I mean, I know that Patty Jenkins was hired to do Thor and left over, like, creative differences, but I... What exactly do you know about what happened there?
Oh, I think she just said that she came with very strong ideas and they came with very strong ideas and they were unwilling to budge and just expected her to execute. Which sounds like why, you know, like... Edgar Wright would like leave Ant-Man. I think they've stopped doing that for sure.
I think
like at Marvel Studios has gotten much better once it's freed itself from Marvel proper, and it's been much more responsive than the DC movies have been to what works about their movies. Like even if, you know, they are controlling, we aren't getting enough like female led characters, they still started this venture with like their most useless properties. Like they made Guardians of the Galaxy a hit that's a talking tree and raccoon and like differently colored people. Iron Man was their thing out of the gate, and they've done it entirely without doing alcoholism, which I would have said was like the only notable Iron Man story to tell at the time in 2008. So it's just been interesting that they've been able to adapt to the response of the characters better than I guess other movie studios have. It's just going to be interesting to see if that translates into more director freedom. Like, it's, you know,
what,
the director of Deadpool 2 gonna have a lot of freedom, or is he just going to be told to make Deadpool 1 again?
I mean, I agree with most of what you say, and I would almost shift it slightly to be like, the expectation is different. I think maybe Patty Jenkins came in with an expectation that she would get to execute some sort of grand vision. And maybe now Marvel has a conversation before hiring someone that they're like, we're so excited to hear what you want to do, but also it needs to fit with this larger thing we're doing. You know what I mean? As long as that expectation is set, I think it's harder for people to, you know, be disappointed because they didn't have a different expectation of what they would be, quote unquote, allowed to do. So I think that's part of what's going on at Marvel. But I also think that Guardians emboldened them. I think the success of Guardians made them feel like, oh, okay, so the audience will go with us if we do a Taika comedy Thor, you know? And they will go with us if we do, if we go to Wakanda and it just gets to be as Wakandan as possible, you know? So I don't know. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm really hoping Black Panther does well because that will encourage them to continue to move in that direction, I think.
I think Black Panther needs to do good. And I also think whatever there needs at the end of Avengers 4, there needs to be a hard pivot. And I would like it not to be into an interconnected phase. I would like Marvel Phase 4 to not have a crossover movie.
Well, Feige says he said they're done with phases after Avengers 4. That Avengers 4 is a hard conclusion, and then they're not. It's not phases anymore.
So, good. Music to my ears. It was a good experiment, and I can't believe we're going to actually see the goddamn end of it, but if we could get movies like Thor Ragnarok along the way, it was a worthwhile experiment. Suicide Squad, it was not. Hilarious, it was.
Great, great transition.
So, off that, Neil, what's happening next week on Storm of Spoilers?
Guys, next week, we are going to see a movie I'm told is real, but I am skeptical. Allegedly, it took two directors and to unite either the seven or the five or several superheroes in the other largest cinematic universe, the DC. What is it? The DC Extended Universe? The
DC Universe.
Whatever. Yeah. Oh, whatever, yeah, it's called. We're going to see Justice League. Well, here's the thing. I still don't think this is a real movie. I don't think it's done. I'm not buying it. But I've been told that I can see it next week.
Buzz is positive and pleasant from people we know who have seen it. So
allegedly. Unless they're being paid by DC. Ugh. That's my new theory.
They just got everybody into a room in London last week and were like, you guys want to hear the funniest joke?
Right. At that point, they didn't even have to pay them. They just flew them all to London and they got to hang out with Jason Momoa, which... honestly, I would have walked out of that room being like, Justice League's the best movie of the year. So we are going to see Justice League. We are going to podcast about it, whatever the experience may be. And I feel like we're all going in with optimism. At least it's only 2 hours
long. This is like the closest to a film festival superhero screening I've ever been to. I have a vague idea of what it's supposed to be, but I have no idea what I'm walking into.
I'm still going in with my same lowered expectations. But I will say this, my friends who, I swear I have friends, they're more real than Justice League. My friends who I see,
they're protesting outside our house right now.
Those people went home 'cause it's dark now. My friends, with whom I see every single comic book movie are not going to see Justice League. We're breaking the tradition.
Ooh,
for Justice
League.
Wow. I'm seeing it because I'm seeing a press screening, but I will not be getting my usual man, you know, person of the people experience.
They just can't handle that cyborg action.
I mean, Batman v. I was super drunk when we saw Batman v Superman, so like I enjoyed it, but I was trying to convince them. I was like, we had fun doing that. They're like, no. That was a terrible experience. I was like, no, we had a really fun time. Like, I was super drunk. I don't remember most of it, but it was really fun. They were like, no, it was terrible. So
that's fair.
But if Justice League is good, then we are, what is it, six for six comic book movies this year? Spider-Man was good. Logan was good. Thor is good. Guardians is good. Wonder Woman's good. So if Justice League is good, then that's a solid sweep. So,
or Justice League is the only bad one.
Yeah. No.
Oh, poor Justice League.
Justice League.
How could a movie with so much budget that's been in production for years with some of the biggest stars like be currying so much sympathy for me for trying to exist in November of 2017? Well, we're gonna see something, that's for sure, and we're gonna come talk to you about it next week. It's going to be another Thursday episode because we all spent Tuesday seeing the movie, hopefully, or pretending we saw a movie in a vast conspiracy. And there will be calm and storm sections, but only in the storm section will we tell you if we were lying about there being a movie. So until next time, where could people find more of your work on the internet? Mr. Neil Miller.
Get me over at filmschoolrejects.com. You can actually hear me talk about Thor even more on One Perfect Pod this week. And follow me on Twitter at Rejects. Don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers. And if you have any Justice League commentary, it is going to be stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And Miss Joanne Robinson.
You can find me on vanityfair.com. You can hear me talking about Lady Bird, which is just a delightful film, over on Little Gold Men this week. I was a guest star on Buffering Podcast this week, talking about a great Spike episode, Lover's Walk Season 3. So listen to that. It's really, really fun. And you can find me on Twitter at I Can't Stop Playing the Immigrant Song on Spotify.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find my other podcast, Fighting in the War Room, at fightinginthewarroom.com. This week, I get goaded in to going on a rant, connecting the Telecommunications Act of 1996 to Citizens United to the living hell that we live in today, and tell you why getting a Google Home is seeding bad in a seeding ground in a future legal case. Definitely check it out. And other than that, we will see you next week. To pretend we all saw a movie about Superman.